On a Saturday morning, members of Radioactive's editorial committee went to a farmer's market and asked people what interesting stories they had to tell. This is what they said.
Their go-to story.
Yeah.
My go-to story at a party.
Shit, I'm terrible at this.
On the spot.
Story about what?
Oh, I want to like think of something really creative and funny.
Oh gosh. So it was in the summer. It was August of 2012. And I was out celebrating with my friends from high school. We like had a reunion kind of thing. And we were near Green Lake, and it had been like a really beautiful warm summer day. And we had some liquid courage from the pub. And we went down and went swimming at Green Lake, and I was the first one to jump in. I kind of always am. And I jumped off the end of the dock and crashed into the water and hit my head. And my friends pulled me out and drove me to the hospital. And I was totally fine. Like, I had a broken neck, but, like, I wasn't paralyzed or anything.
I moved up here on my motorcycle, started a farm in Woodinville, 1987. I just mean land and growing vegetables. No animals. Willie Green's organic farm.
Well, I usually tell people stories about, like, the farmer's market and stuff. Yeah. So I'll tell people kind of about the really crazy customers that ask the most ridiculous questions that don't make any sense. You just kind of tell stories about those. Like, I've had people come up and ask me, like, they'll get mad at me for not having pineapples at the market. Like, where are the pineapples? I need pineapples. Like, well, this is Washington. You can't grow pineapples in Washington. And they just get really mad about it and start walking off. Like, okay, bye. Yeah.
So when I was like 5, so I was dumb because 5-year-olds aren't very smart. My older brother came into the living room from the computer room, and he had my mom's wedding ring because she took it off when she typed. He said it'd be really fun to toss it up behind us and as high as we could and then go and find it in the living room, which is fine. But I was 5 and I was like, we could toss it up way higher if we went outside. And so me and my older brother, who should have known better because he was 8 and 8-year-olds are smart, go into the backyard and throw the ring up as high as we can behind us and turn around. And as far as we know, a crow caught it and flew away because we got the metal detector, got the whole family out there, searched the entire backyard for a couple days and never found it. So that's how I lost my mom's wedding ring when I was 5.
I feel so bad for the mom. I'm Natalie Newcomb, and this is Radioactive's podcast.
And I'm Jad Yanyu. Everyone has a story to tell, and we thought that it would be cool to see what they were. Our first story takes us to Africa.
Radioactive's Maya Kahn talked to her dad, Steve, about his childhood in Africa and the relationship between him and his older brother.
My mother was from Kansas, and my father was born in New Orleans and raised in Mobile, Alabama. I have 3 brothers and 3 sisters, and I was the only one who was born in the United States. The rest were born in Nigeria.
What? So, like, your siblings, they say, like, when you say, where were you born, they say Nigeria?
They should, if they're telling the truth.
Why did you go to Nigeria?
Because my dad was a missionary in the Lutheran Church, and my mother was a mission nurse. So I believe my parents went over in 19... The World War II had just been over. When they went over the first time. And that's, my older sister was born on that first trip.
So why do I not know any of this? Anyways, what was it like living in Nigeria?
Well, when we first got there, of course, I was an infant, and so I didn't really, all I know is from pictures that I've seen that my parents took.
What? How? Why am I just hearing about all this now?
Because you're asking. I've shown you pictures before.
In Africa?
I believe so. But when we were first there, we lived in houses made of mud with thatched roofs. There was no running water and no electricity. So our light came from kerosene lamps, and we cooked on a wood stove.
What did you guys wear then?
It was very hot there. So during the week, at least the boys would run around in shorts, and sometimes we'd have a shirt and sometimes not, and usually bare feet.
So what did you do? What did you do like throughout the day?
In the general day, it was usually the boys would run off and do something, some kind of adventure. And I don't know what the girls did. Instead of cowboys and Indians, we played Tarzan and things like that, you know. There are these traders that would come from the north to south. We lived in the south, but we vacationed in the north. They'd bring their stuff down and they'd sell things like trinkets one of the things that me and my brothers really liked were these daggers that they sold in a sheath. They were just kind of like little, kind of like pocket knives, except they were a little bit bigger than that. And I was playing around on the veranda on the rail. I had these wide rails, and I don't know how it happened, but somehow I slipped and fell and hit my forehead on the concrete porch, and just blood was gushing everywhere. And my older brother, who was playing with me at the time, he took his dagger out and dipped it in the pool of blood that was forming on the concrete floor, and ran in to tell my mom and said, "Mom, look, I killed a leopard." And mom, of course, freaked out. She came rushing out and they took me to the hospital. I had some stitches put in, but it always struck in my mind that that was the first thing that my brother thought of, was to pretend that he had killed a leopard instead of going to help me and get mom right away. So we had a sort of friendly, sometimes adversarial relationship, but I looked up to him and he kind of helped me out sometimes, even though he would be annoyed with me, as older brothers often are with younger brothers.
Have I met all your siblings?
Yes, I don't know that you'd remember them.
Really?
We're a little distant. We just wanted to get some space around ourselves. I don't know exactly why. But I know we were close when we were in Africa.
Is there anything else that you'd like to say?
I guess it's a different kind of childhood, and at the time it didn't seem different, but looking back, I always wonder how I would be different if I hadn't grown up there. But I can't help but feel it shaped me in some way.
I think it's really cool that depending on one's environment or how they're raised, it can really change how they grow up when they're older. And once again, that's Radioactive's Maya Kahn with her dad, Steve.
Speaking of interesting family members, my uncle, John Sino, has his own story to tell. In 2006, my uncle helped produce the documentary Iraq in Fragments, which was nominated for an Oscar for Best Documentary. He and I sat down and talked about the ceremony and its aftermath.
The movie was a documentary about the situation in Iraq post the collapse of Saddam Hussein's government and the invasion, and how that event made living in Iraq very difficult for people. They were dealing with the aftermath of the war and with being under occupation. And what the director of the film, James Longley, tried to do was to focus on the people, ordinary people, and how the ordinary people always suffer in a situation because they don't have a lot of resources at their disposal. And you know, one of the things we did is we kind of applied to the Academy Award. We have to fill out some sort of paperwork and stuff, and so we filled that out. And well, there's also a whole bunch of requirements in order to kind of qualify. Like for example, the film has to be in theaters for a certain number of weeks in both LA and New York in order for it to qualify. And so we did all of these You know, just because in the Academy Awards basically give a lot of legitimacy to films and bring a lot of visibility with them. So anybody who's involved in film obviously wants to have that help with marketing and with driving viewership.
Then the night of the ceremony came.
The ceremony was a very, in some ways, overwhelming, in some ways, underwhelming. It was overwhelming because, you know, the outside of it was like, you know, like, I mean, seeing celebrities and seeing people dressed up to the ninth, the production outside, the limousines, all of it was kind of very amazing to experience, like, very close up. The event itself, the telecast itself is underwhelming because it was made and produced as a telecast. So it was made in a way that would look exciting for viewers watching it on TV. The viewers were watching it inside the auditorium. It felt like just kind of another kind of a show, you know, like a Broadway show. And not only that, you had to stop every, you know, 10 minutes or so because there was a commercial break, so it was nothing to do. And people would go and grab drinks, and you see, like, all the stars going up and down, you know. And so, and then all the graphics that you see on the telecast, we don't see. You know, you hear, like, sounds and stuff. So you kind of realize that an event like this is mostly produced for the medium that it's produced for, which is TV. And not for people actually sitting there.
But soon, the reality of why he was there began to sink in.
The most difficult part of, like, being in a show like this is fully knowing while you're sitting there that there is, you know, 30, 40 million people watching you. Like, I don't know how many people, but it's a lot of people. I mean, it's an audience more than you've ever had in your life. So that always kind of weighs on you. What if you actually win? Mm-hmm. And you sit with the people in the documentary section, so you're very close to people who are in the same you're competing with, and they're all basically experiencing that moment when they announce who won. And it was a very surreal moment because it ends up being kind of very slow motion like. I mean, they're saying, like, and, you know, the winner for best documentary. I remember at that time, I mean, I was like, you know, I wasn't even, like, understanding what's going on. And it was, like, very, like, a swoosh of, like, you know, information. And even though I was not necessarily planning to say anything, it was still, like, a very difficult thing to go through, thinking that, you know, very soon you might actually have to kind of be in front of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that when we lost, I felt like a sigh of relief. It's like, okay, so I don't have to do anything now. And ended up watching the group behind An Inconvenient Truth with Vice President Al Gore go up and receive the award.
But something about the ceremony didn't sit right with him, and he decided to do something about it.
So if I remember correctly, the segment was announced by Jerry Seinfeld. And I remember at the time thinking, why did they choose a comedian to kind of announce a documentary section? I mean, wouldn't be a documentarian would have been a better, you know, suited person to announce. But, you know, that's the it's the Oscars, and it's an entertainment show. But what he said was kind of like struck me as being kind of off. Because he said something like very depressing documentaries, and people started laughing. And I remember, like, thinking, it's like, of course they're depressing. I mean, we live in a very difficult time in human history. And the idea is to, you know, for somebody like James Longley, who risked his life to kind of make this film, they deserve to be seen. All these documentaries deserve to be seen and discussed and admired and learned from. I mean, like, you know, So it just struck me as being kind of weird that the person who's presenting the category is telling people that these films are depressing, you know, in some ways telling them, don't watch them. So that's that kind of, remember, like, looking at James at the time, I was like, what's going on here? Like, this is weird. And then, you know, like 2-3 days later, I thought about it some more, and I felt like I wanted to kind of basically talk about this issue, and also talk about the issue that some of the hurdles that the Academy have put on filmmakers. This have changed since then. There's been many changes. So I wrote this letter, and it was an open letter to the Academy saying, I wish you would take this kind of category seriously in terms of presenting it the way it should be presented. And they do take the thing seriously, but you know, I'm sure that the person producing it made some choices, and you know, to the extent that the year after I wrote the letter, they announced the documentary section from Iraq, with members of the U.S. military basically announcing the, you know, so I felt somehow vindicated that they actually listened to me. Even though I got like a very nasty phone call, you know, after the letter was published on the internet and from the Academy. But I truly felt that I made some little difference in terms of like bringing awareness to this issue.
So, Jad, is your uncle the cool relative that everyone wants to talk to?
Yeah, he is. He's wanted to be a filmmaker since he was young, so it's very cool to see him be recognized by an organization as prestigious as the Academy.
Thank you to our reporters, Azeb Tuji, Maya Kanz, and Melissa Takai, and special thanks to our master mixer, Azeb Tuji.
Thank you to our editor, Jenny Sarno, and to anyone who answered our questions.
Make sure you like us on Facebook at Radioactive Youth Media and follow us on Twitter at KUW Radioactive.
We hope you listen to us more at kuw.org/radioactive. Signing off, this is Jad Vianu.
And Natalie Newcomb.
And you're listening to Radioactive.